that shit.
Joint Special Committee on Professional Responsibilities, House Members Only, June 14th, 1973, House Bill 2530, Work Session, 9:30, Room 209.
Special meeting of the House Committee on Professional Responsibilities will come to order, and we're considering the draft of House Bill 2530. Common Cause submitted some more suggested changes, which we will consider as they arrive. Granton, will you go through the bill with us? And as in all our work sessions, it's very informal. Everybody talks all the time. So, go.
Okay. First, before we even get into it, the bill says that it amends ORS Chapter 171, and it's Chuck's belief that when we get to the point of passing it out, I presume that's what we'll do today, that we'd rather strike the existing statutes and replace it with this, because what you're doing is putting on about 14 pounds of legislation on a 2-pound statute or something along that relation, as opposed to taking and putting that into this. You've got a great weight differential. So you end up just striking that and substituting this, which we can do with a technical amendment, if that's all right.
My only question, Chuck, does this stand alone? Why don't you come up the table? Bring the chair up.
It's
Norma will be there. Why don't you go there? Bring the chair over.
Mr. Chairman, this draft, as you well realize, is not in such form as you could use to submit it with your committee report. It needs to be done in amendment form. And when I get around to doing that, I'll put it in form so that you don't have any.
And then it will stand alone.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So then section one would be reworked as a when Chuck put it in. Yes, the second sentence of the original preamble, which reads, the Legislative Assembly finds that to preserve and maintain the integrity of the legislative process, it is necessary that the attorneys, expenditures, and activities of certain persons would engage in efforts to persuade members of the Legislative Assembly or the Executive Branch to take specific action, either by direct communications to such officials or by solicitation of others to engage in such efforts, be publicly and regularly disclosed.
Well, we took out administrative, but we put it back in somewhere else.
We, what we did was put into the definition of
lobbying.
Legislation. We put in there the question of formal rulemaking proceedings of a state agency to cover that. We still got something left out. When we get down to those, we're still missing boards and state agencies. We define that what they do, but we don't have them. Okay, section three. As used in this act, unless the context required otherwise, one, consideration means a gift, payment, distribution, loan, conveyance, or deposit of money, or anything of value, and includes a contract, promise, or agreement, whether or not legally enforceable.
I don't understand that language. But I guess I objected to it the other night when they...
Is there a comma between payment and distribution?
No. It's not my understanding that there is. It's a distribution of the payment, isn't it? I'm not sure what that language means.
It's in the original bill.
What does whether or not legally enforceable mean?
The question was raised earlier and said that it was some
suitable
agreement.
You and I might make an agreement on gambling bet. Like I bet Magruder $5 on winning the election. that is not legally enforceable because it's prohibited from gambling.
I see.
It's not an enforceable bit.
The original bill, it doesn't show a comment between payment and distribution. I'm not sure what a payment distribution is. I presume it's a distribution of a payment. I really don't show.
Beats me.
Yeah.
You know, Bill, what that's in there?
No, I wasn't involved.
Well, it is, it is.
I
There was no comma between.
It was supposed to be a comma.
There was no comma between payment and distribution.
I would imagine it was supposed to be.
I think so too, let's pick one.
Yes, payment and distribution. Definition of legislation remains the same as it was through Monday night. Legislation means introduction, sponsorship, testimony, debate, voting, or any other official action on any measure, resolution, amendment, nomination, appointment, or report, or any matter which may be the subject of action by either House of the Legislative Assembly, any committee thereof, any joint committee of the Legislative Assembly, or any formal rulemaking proceeding of a state agency, required to be held pursuant to ORS 183.335.
If we have any committee thereof, do we need any joint committee?
I wouldn't think so.
Anybody object to taking off?
Which line is that?
Well, it's about the fifth line.
Fifth line of sub 2 on page 2.
Okay, we'll strike it.
Legislative official means any member or member-elect of the Legislative Assembly, any member of a commission established by or responsible to the Legislative Assembly, or either House thereof, and any staff person, assistant, or employee thereof.
There are women hours in here while we're doing this, and I'm just sitting on it.
He's in the Senate chambers.
Well, don't worry about it when he comes back, though.
Now you would have, in effect, through using the definition of legislation and legislative official, you would cover a lobbyist who lobbied a member of the legislature, a member of the executive branch, if I'm not mistaken, only in that they would be represented by a commission. We don't have boards of state agencies. When we took out the definition of executive official, we didn't add state agencies and boards back into that definition. Was Chuck suggesting?
No negatives.
False alarm.
Was Chuck suggesting that we go ahead and make a definition of executive official?
I don't understand what you're saying.
Well, under legislative official, the only ones we include are members or members-elect of the Legislative Assembly and any member of a commission. And that's who these people, that's who lobbyists lobby. They lobby legislative officials.
I didn't think we were talking about lobbying people. We were talking about lobbying legislation.
Yes, right. But we don't.
The only reason we put the definition of legislative official in was because it was referred to back in some other subset, section 8 or 9 or something, where they weren't supposed to receive other compensation.
Chuck, do you have any?
Well, Mr. Chairman, my.
Maybe I'll meet in the house lounge.
My recollection of that matter was that in
response to some discussion of this, Mr. Frohnmeyer said that if you don't have a definition of executive official in the bill, there are some lobbying activities which would be included in the bill for which there would be technically no person for the lobbyist to lobby. In the rulemaking setting, what you're doing is attempting to influence an executive department official in his, you know, development of a rule, you know, that governs the activities of a state agency. And if you didn't have an executive official for that person to lobby, there'd be.
Yeah, but the definition of lobbying doesn't the definition of lobbying, where it speaks to influencing or attempting to influence passage or defeat of legislation, and then you refer back to what legislation is, and that's rulemaking. So that would mean that you are lobbying if you attempt to influence rulemaking by speaking to anyone about it, rather than trying to pin it down to somebody.
Yes, but by the same token, then, in other words, you could say...
Indeed, if you're just talking to the secretary of the committee or whatever, secretary to the administrator, whatever it is.
Okay, so you'll end up with saying that any member of a commission established by or responsible to the legislative assembly, which you don't mention specifically in the bill, state boards and state agencies aren't specifically mentioned.
I think that legislative official definition has principal importance. I think Representative Cole is correct. You address your remarks to the substance of what the lobbyist attempts to affect, rather than to the person. And the definition of legislative official is principally important for the purposes of the exclusion in Section 4 on page 3, subsection 3. That word appears there.
Sub 5 of 7.
Okay, George, do you have a suggestion?
No, I think it's fine the way it is.
I thought.
So that in sub 5 of 7, you'd say no legislative official, that would mean that only a member of a commission would be excluded from taking money for lobbying. A member of a state board or a member of a state agency who was not specifically identified in that could, in fact, lobby.
Well, I don't know. This is a definition out of the original bill, isn't it?
Yeah. But the original bill included a definition of executive official, which caught all these people up, which we took out.
Yeah, but where a legislative official is used elsewhere in the bill, which was the salary portion, executive official isn't mentioned. Increase or add to the definition of legislative official,
right,
for these other purposes.
Right. If you were to put in any member of a board, commission, or something like that, if you're referring to state agency, when you got down to saying where no legislative official could be paid for lobbying outside of his state salary, then you'd cover. Is that correct, John?
I'm not sure I understand what you've said.
Well, when you get down to sub 5 of section 7, no legislative official shall receive consideration from any person other than the state of Oregon for acting as a lobbyist. We come back up to the definition of legislative official. That means a member-elect,
mm-hmm,
and any member of a commission.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so all those people are not specifically
board
stated can, so that you want to include them. Yeah. State board or commissioner, agency.
As I remember the discussion again, Mr. Chairman, on this subject, the language, any member of a commission established by or responsible to the Legislative Assembly, that was intended to mean activities like the Criminal Law Revision Commission, as opposed to the some commission established and functioning in the executive branch of government. Does anyone else remember it that way?
Well, the only reason we have legislative officials is, like you pointed out, Chuck, is two places. The exception under Section 4 that the Act doesn't apply to,
right,
and the salary business.
And the prohibitions.
Right. Prohibition. Under the exclusion, we have any public official or employee acting as official capacity. Wouldn't that cover?
That would cover them there.
Everybody?
That would cover everybody there.
So we don't have to worry about it there, but how about on the salary?
Right, that's the only problem. Running to sub 5 of 7.
Sub 5 of 7. Seem to make sense to me where it's worded.
Well, we recognize that members of these commissions and staff or do lobby, but they should not receive a salary for it.
I see.
That was the idea.
Well, perhaps it's the phrase for acting as a shall receive consideration for acting as a lobbyist should be, for acting as a lobbyist should be after consideration, I think.
Can we do that section when we get to it?
Oh, sorry.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the reason why we're considering that is because whether we should expand the definition of legislative official.
Is there a suggestion of how we should expand it?
Well, what could we use that would include agencies, boards, and commissions? Say that? Agency, boards, and commissions.
Well, you've got it in there. Yeah. Any member of a commission, if you want to put agency, board, or commission, that would be fine.
That might be.
Of an agency, board, or.
Mr. Chairman, had you intended then that language apply to executive department people, or had you still
this restricts it only to a board, agency, or commission established by the legislature
or responsible,
or is responsible directly to the legislature.
Okay, but if you think about that, all executive agency operations that are in the statute books were created by the legislature at one time or another.
All right.
And if you had intended this to apply to something other than the criminal law revision kind of thing that is really the legislature's own and not an executive department activity.
What are we doing?
I think you need to say it a little differently.
I don't think we intend, and this is consensus in the country, I don't think we intend to direct this toward the executive department, do we?
Okay. I think that's the policy decision you need to make, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. How about the Attorney General's office or the Secretary of State's office? They would be under it, as it's written. Any member of a commission established by or responsible. I mean, they're not part of the executive department, but would they be under this?
I think a very sort of a strict, literal interpretation of it would lead you to that conclusion, Representative.
But does it matter? Because in Section 4, we're excluding them from the Act.
It
really doesn't matter how we define legislative official, because the only reason it's in there is because of the exclusion and the prohibition.
Right. The prohibition is the only tanks, because you could take, because the, by saying no public official, that's everybody. But in the exclusion, you say no public official. The only reason you need to make legislative official inclusive is that you say that they can't be paid for the law.
Could we put a period up?
And that statement to the, in subsection 4 on page 5 appears too, where it says, no lobbyist shall make misrepresentation to a legislative official.
Well, could we put a period after assembly? Legislative official means any member or member elected of the legislative assembly.
That's, again, Mr. Chairman, you could do that if you'd like, but it's a, quite obviously a policy decision that departs from things like staff and employees. If you did that, that would be the result, whatever you decide.
Well, I think that's important to get in.
I think we just make it agency, board, or commission.
Let's try it and see what happens. Agency, board, or commission.
Lobbying means influencing or attempting to influence by direct communication the passage and defeat of legislation or the approval or veto thereof by the governor, or attempting to influence other executive branch action or inaction regarding passage, defeat, or veto of legislation.
Go on, that's
I can't remember. Did we decide to put in rulemaking, or we decided we didn't need to put it in?
That's above, it's up to.
Oh, okay, that's right. Put it up there, I remember. I had it here as a note.
Right. Lobbyist means any person who agrees to provide his personal services for money or any other consideration for the purpose of lobbying. B.
Well, I have two examples, and I'm going to put common cause, of letters sent to me by state agencies, soil and water conservation, and the public employee retirement system, both certainly lobbying me at state expense. Now, do you want to?
They're excluded. I wonder if they.
Legislative official.
Like public official.
But, you know, well, I haven't read the letter, but you showed them to me. I assume that what they're doing is explaining why they either want or don't want a bill.
Yes, both unamended House Bill 22 will allow retirement board and so on. Both legislative session is coming in, and I plan to continue this letter to you at your home. I object to that very strenuously.
Well, I don't think it serves the public to stop that kind of thing, because my complaint is that you don't get enough information from the agencies on bills that affect them. I think they have an obligation to inform the legislature how the bill affects that particular agency. How else are we, where else are we to get our information?
And of course, we're always testifying at hearings. Okay, forget it.
Any person not otherwise subject to paragraph A of this section who provides his personal services as a representative of a corporation, association, organization, or other group for the purpose of lobbying. Section 4. The provisions of Section 3 of this Act do not apply to the following persons. Subs 1, 2, 3, and 4 remain the same as they were voted on Monday night. News media or their employees or agents who in the ordinary course of business publish or broadcast news items, editorials, or other comments, or paid advertisements which directly or indirectly urge legislation, if such persons engage in no other activities in connection with such legislation. 2. Any public official or employee acting as official capacity.
Now wait a minute, on 1, I think I brought this up Monday night. I wonder if there shouldn't be a period after legislation, the first one. There are situations where somebody in the news media is also on the board of directors, we'll say, for the state association, and occasionally, like Phil Bledin, they appear as he did before our committee.
Strictly to what they were doing in their profession.
Yeah.
When they were
recall, Phil was down here two or three times on the Shield bill as a representative of the Oregon Publishers Association.
And as long as he only came and registered to testify, he wasn't a lobbyist, but this might catch him.
Yeah.
Well, he'd come out of the, with the, in the exception sub 4, though, wouldn't he? Just limit their activities so formal.
Okay, I think that's right.
Right. He's going to be running around buttonholing legislators.
Better register.
And maybe he ought to.
Any legislative official acting in his official capacity. Sub 4. Persons who receive no consideration for lobbying and limit their lobbying activities solely for formal appearances to give testimony before public sessions of committees of the Legislative Assembly or public hearings of state agencies, and who, if they testify, register their appearance in the records of such committees or agencies.
Now we have a...
Shouldn't that be solely two formal appearances rather than solely four?
Yes. We have a woman from Eugene, I have no idea who she, what her name is, who is unpaid and down here solely for her causes, but boy, she lobbies in your office and everything else. What's her name?
Chris Edney.
She doesn't get paid, but she sure is still a lobbyist.
We're at, on page... 3 sub 5. Any individual who receives no consideration for lobbying and who does not spend an amount in excess of $50 during any period in which a lobbyist is required to report lobbying expenses, excluding the cost of personal travel, telephone, and lodging.
That doesn't get my girl. I sure as hell want her to get registered.
Oh, Chris?
Why don't we just call her up
there? The Edney amendment, this will be known. Okay.
We want the capital club to take care of it.
Doesn't she represent zero population to take some of the...
I don't know. She represents a lot.
League of Women Voters, zero population. At least she pretends to.
Then she would have to... Environmental
Council.
She would have to register that.
She's not the formal... She probably is registered.
No, she isn't. I asked her. Came in to see me yesterday on something, and I was so irritated to see her. No, she doesn't get paid.
Well, she represents herself under Section 3, on page 2, Section 3, Subsection 5, Paragraph B. Any person not otherwise subject to paragraph B who provides the services of representatives of corporation, association, organization, or the group. Seems to be better.
Yeah, but she comes in. She comes under the exclusion.
Well, we can't very well write the notice around that one because she irritates us all.
She represents herself only then. That's the only way she can do it. She can't say, I represent ZPG or Oregon Environmental Council.
Tell her to stay away.
All right. Well, why don't you take my place down in Eugene and I can ride with her all with Eugene.
What's her name?
Chris Edneve. Long red hair.
Maybe we could get her a job.
Why not? Everybody else is on the thing.
We could make her a public official.
I don't think you met her.
Or she'd still be exempt.
Section 5.1. Within 3 working days after engaging in lobbying...
Oh, wait a minute. I want one more question on 5.
Right.
$50 during any period in which the lobbyist is required. Is that quarterly now?
That's a month.
That's a month.
Or quarterly, depending on whether the session's in or out.
Oh, is that how we end
it? Yeah, it amounts up to $300 for an average 6-month session. So you get to spend $300 during the session.
That's pretty high, really.
Yeah, leave the door open something.
I mean, that's plenty high enough.
That's plenty high. Because that doesn't include travel, lodging, and telephone. That's $50 a month in Xerox.
Okay.
Section 5.1. Within 3 working days after engaging in lobbying, each lobbyist shall register with the office of the Secretary of State.
Whoops. Is that where we're going to leave that?
Well, Chuck and I have been over it, and there have been a number of places in which we've made some minor changes so that if the bill were to pass, you could catch up depending on which one gets out last. you can catch up on the Senate side and have it conform to 25-29.
Okay.
This one gets out later, this change on the Senate side, zip it through.
Mr. Chairman, may I interrupt a moment? Back to subsection 5 of section 4, it just occurs to me that if you say $50 during any period in which a lobbyist is required to report lobbying expenses, did you mean for the result to obtain in that case that if the lobbying activity occurs during a session, the limitation is $50 a month, but if the lobbying activity occurs during an off-session time, it's $50 a quarter. Is that what you intend?
Yeah, I guess so. That's the way it says, anyway.
Well, right. I think that's the result it obtains.
I don't think during the off-session we have to worry about it to that same extent, do we? You sure write it in there easy, but...
Okay. Shall register with the Office of the Secretary of State by filing with him a statement containing the following information. And here's your first common cause amendment, which would be, go in here, would be the name of the person registered. B, the name and address of each person by whom the registrant is employed or in whose interest he appears or works, and a designation by each such person that the lobbyist is officially authorized to lobby for that person. And then I presume would be this first one, the description of the matters in which the lobbyist expects to lobby.
Excuse me, may I have one of those?
Yeah.
Okay, name and address of the registrant. Then would be, and then, where's the bill?
That and the bill. Changed.
Oh, Blanche. And then they want to take the period off the registrant, after registrant, and add a description of the matters on which the lobbyist expects to lobby.
It could be that way or a new C.
It must be a new C.
Word matters.
Issues.
What was the other word? I don't have my bill here, so we were talking about this when you first proposed your amendments, and it was, what was the word that was descriptive of areas?
Generic area.
Generic category.
Whatever that means.
Well, that means lumber or fish or newspapers or firemen.
Is that what it means? Generic?
Bar? Yeah.
I thought it has something to do with heredity.
That's genetic.
George.
Here, we look to you for...
Like Chris has been talking to you.
One of our reads is weakening.
He has.
Generic what?
I don't like that. I don't think it belongs in A.
Name and address of each person by whom the resident is employed, and...
What? If you register to lobby for somebody, at the time you're registering to lobby, you should put down who it is that you're lobbying for. You have five different groups that indicate who each of those five groups are. Their business.
I'm not really familiar with lobbying, but I was under the impression that there are times
both down.
And if they were,
each person by whom the registrant is employed or in whose interest he appears or works, comma, the generic area.
Well, I'm not married to that generic area.
Or whatever. Any designation by.
The subject matter or
subject area.
Subject area, which.
I mean, what the public wants to know is who's paying what, whom to do what, and if the pharmacy people are paying him to lobby me on pharmacy bills, and then he comes in and says, "Oh, incidentally, I sure like I have your off-road vehicle. I mean, I have an off-road vehicle, and I hate your bill."
Did this happen?
No.
But we have a case like that just happened. But he represents himself.
Yeah.
Still, I was interested in it because it would make all my pharmacy owners pay an additional $50. So while it isn't really dealing with drugs, it deals with mine. In our case, the pharmacy owner's business. But it isn't really, how would I describe that?
You would have had no way to manage.
That's the problem. Who knows exactly what area you're going to. So, I think if you just describe it as description of trade business or area of endeavor.
There, that's good. That's good.
Type of business.
Trade business or area of endeavor.
Say that again. Trade profession, business, or area of
endeavor. Area of endeavor. That would categorize.
Business or area of endeavor, and a designation by each person.
Blanche, you know what? I just this B thing. Or are you on that yet?
No, we are. If that's agreeable. Any objection?
Sounds good.
Now let me tell you why I don't think this will work, and I don't want you to think that I'm thinking for the lobbyists and all the protected interests, but it's a matter of practical application. There's already been an editorial in this morning's Statesman about how the open meetings bill can't work for the very reason that I mentioned about the two commissioners in the pothole road. Now it's the two school board members playing golf together in the shower. And that's playing golf together or being in the shower afterwards. So I'm trying to demonstrate to you why, if you want a good bill, you have to look at issues that are going to come up. Now, if we adopted B, what could happen is they would be guilty and could be fined for an error of omission rather than commission. If you want them to list every bill, now if I had it in for Mr. Speckman and he came over in an aside or at a coffee as you're sitting down there and somebody was talking about a bill and he said, joined in the conversation and said, "Well, yeah, I think that's a pretty good bill." He's not being paid by anybody to lobby for it or against it. But he speaks on it, he has his own feelings, or maybe one of his people owns a vehicle or something, anything like that. It comes up in a normal conversation. And somebody's sitting at the table and they've got it in for him, but for one reason or another, and that goes on here all the time. It's just the nature of the business. All he'd have to do is one legislator file a complaint. When he filed his return, they look down and say, "Gee, he doesn't have 2282 down here," and he's subject to losing his business and censure and fine. And that's why your subsection B won't work.
Could you write in there? You could possibly put that they have been paid. If you're suggesting that they're talking about things they're just
But
what about the circumstance that we're sitting down there and he says, "Boy, my pharmacist sure wouldn't like that $50 registration vehicle bill, and I sure hope it doesn't pass tonight."
He wouldn't even have to say his pharmacist.
And we when the reporting time comes in, he hasn't been working on that bill at all. He just doesn't occur to him to write it. He can get trapped. There isn't any way that that can be enforceable and enforceable in a just fashion.
Okay, that's the Second Amendment proposed by Common Cause. It's titled B on their slip. All those who are in favor of inserting it in the as C under Section 5, clerk, call the roll.
Representative Riley?
Aye.
Representative Lucas?
Aye.
No.
No. I'd like to explain why I say aye, Bob, and that's because I think that we could possibly write something in there. I don't want to prolong this. Is there a way that you could write it in there, Chuck, without throwing that out entirely? Under the circumstances that Norma mentioned, he's paid to lobby for the pharmacist, and this bill indirectly affects the pharmacist.
Okay. It failed, but I just...
Okay.
Well, I guess I'm not so vindictive that I would try to catch somebody like that, so
I... Well, I don't think most people would, but it could happen.
Must be said, I wish he had been employed to lobby.
Let's go on to
have to call the house. Go tell her that I can't leave unless they have a call of the house that she wants. I don't know how Greg Steele's moped bill just got off the table somehow.
It did.
The designation
of official authorization to lobby shall be signed by an officer of each such corporation, association, or organization, or other group, by each or by each individual by whom the registrant is employed, or in whose interest he appears or works.
Now, would that get our girl?
Yes, she's going to have to register.
Maybe we could just have her arrested and jailed. You know, if that...
Well, we come in, we can say, are you an official lobbyist for the
ZPG?
Whatever it is, and if she says no, well, then we refuse to talk to her.
You have to talk to her anyway.
Okay, let's go.
That discourages citizens in putting it, no matter how offensive she is. If you draft a bill just to take care of her, you're going to shortchange the public.
Okay.
I'll tell her you don't like her not to call in here anymore.
You can't bring her in no matter how you do it.
Okay. Sub 3 is in conflict. I put brackets around it because it's in conflict with Sub 1 of Section 5. It reads, the statement referred to in Subsection 1 of this section shall be filed by lobbyists prior to any lobbying activity. You go back and look at Sub 1, it says within 3 working days after engaging.
We don't need Sub 3 at all, do we?
Section 6. Any lobbyist who engages in any lobbying activities during any session of the Legislative Assembly shall file with the Office of the Secretary of State by the 15th day of each month a statement showing the total monies expended by the lobbyist for the purpose of lobbying in the preceding month. All expenditures in excess of $25 shall be itemized. Now this, the last sentence was...
Benny Cloth. What's that mean? I think it means come in Italian.
You hope that's what it means.
I hope that's what it means. May have been their moral suggestion. Which may have been...
Well, if they have gunshot enough to have a call of the house. Have you been... The Democrats must have been instructed not to have calls of the house anymore, huh?
No, you want one? I'm going to yell.
Well, apparently they do. There's two Democrats calling two Republicans in there.
On the moped? Well, how do they know how they vote on that?
I don't know.
Well, let's get our...
No on Mo.
I like to do Bill a favor, but I think we ought to get on with our work.
The All expenditures in excess of $25 shall be itemized. Representative Cole had an amendment which said essentially the same thing, but Chuck and I just turned it around and said all expenditures under $25 need not be itemized.
Why don't we lock that door?
Let's find who's absent before we go in.
That wouldn't be an open meeting then, would it? I think that's a better word.
Okay, and then it originally read, all expenditures shall be itemized, except that expenditures of $25 or less may be reported in total amount rather than in total. And then the second clause amendment would go right there, number two. Such itemized statement shall list the name of any legislative official to whom or for whose benefit an individual expenditure in excess of $25 is made. And that doesn't tie it to the reporting period. I presume it would retire the same reporting period.
I think that's a good amendment.
We can't go to this.
Why not?
Well, I tried this point to Bill yesterday. The night before last, I was out and there were three groups of people. And we were out at the colonial house. And that night, I would have had to knock down each name of each one of those people and how much their portion of that bill was. Because this is in a reporting period. Be sure that I don't get over $25 a month on any one of those people. If I go over 25, I have to have it itemized. If I go under it, I don't have to have it itemized.
Well, I'll say what's wrong with that.
Well, the bookkeeping thing, we could be out as a cup of tree and five other people come in and join you. We would have to be sure that we know how much we're spending on each one of those to keep it so that we itemize it.
But you see, that's what I don't understand that either. I think if I'm out at the paper tree, I'll buy my own drinks.
Yeah, but they don't do that. Everybody doesn't do that.
Well, they would if the bill was passed.
You wouldn't be buying them for them.
Well, the rest of people in here lobbying against this.
Why do you feel?
Nobody's going
out.
When you're talking about this, the other night I would have had to ask the girl to break down how much I spent on each one of the various ones that were at my table. Because I can't remember that one person had a $6.95 steak.
Well, after three drinks, you can't remember.
$2 steak sandwich or something, because my problem comes in that I have to do it for in a month's time.
Yeah, but
you wouldn't have any problem if we passed this, because you wouldn't be able to do it.
Excuse me.
I would be able to do it, but if they were not
doing that, because here would have said,
Why the hell don't you stay home at night?
This is the one we're talking about.
Well, I'm just saying that this
I think we all recognize your problem.
He can take something out 10 times a month, but each individual expenditure would have to be $5.
I think we're confusing the two here, as Peg just pointed out. The one in here says during the period, but the one in Common Causes says individual expenditure in excess of $25.
So you could spend $10
one
night.
For instance, if you went to Pepper Tree one night, it would be only if it was over $25 then. Not in the Common Cause, though, only in the bill. This would be another.
I think he said that the one bill was to be individual also.
That'd still be a problem.
To add that,
we could spend 50, for instance.
Yeah, but I mean, it wouldn't be as bad a problem if it were for one evening. But if you have to accumulate in a one month period,
this amendment doesn't say that.
But what I'm saying,
I thought we were discussing this one. This is what I was looking at here.
Recognizing it from your standpoint and from Dick's, that has been an accepted practice in this legislature, I suppose, as long as we've had one, and that it is an accepted practice, and that probably you feel that there's no overt gain on your part at any particular bill. But do you really think that that's a good practice and in the public's interest for the legislators just to assume when they go out someplace that you're going to pick up the tab? And I don't. And I think if we pass this bill, then you'd have a good reason, you'd have a good excuse to get off the hook. And I think you should be. I don't think that the pharmacy people should be sending money down to Capitol to buy drinks for me or steaks for me. I simply don't see that that benefits the public.
Or the pharmacists.
We feel that, because as I pointed out before, we feel that what we're doing, and you say this is necessary, but we don't know a lot of these people when we first come down. Because this is the way you get to know them, is to follow them. Just as you do with other people. You don't wait them out, you don't expect them to pay, you don't expect them to
support incumbents.
Well, but if you invite them out, then the reporting thing isn't that difficult.
Well, what we would do is we would limit ourselves to
I think that's the way to do it. Invite a certain number of people to ignore those at another table.
May I ask then,
from table to table.
Does this then do away with our hello party and our goodbye party?
No.
No, you just have to report it.
Who would report?
If you made it, you made a term.
Then I suppose the Capitol Club would have to file a Capitol Club itself, the organization that is the fund holder, would have to file a report.
In that case, couldn't they just say who was there and the total amount that was spent?
Or who was invited and the total amount, I think, would suffice. Sure, I know.
I understand your problem, but if it affects all the lobbyists, then what it does is tries to reverse a practice. And if it applies to everyone equally, then it doesn't lessen.
I would think the amendment would be to your benefit. I really do.
I really do.
Section 6, sub 1, here where it just says all expenditures in excess of $25 shall be itemized. Individuals can be at home.
Let us know if anybody is absent first, will you?
What's it on? Tell them you can't find us.
Tell them we're out to pepper tree with some lobbyists.
Shall be individual expenditures. I think you ought to put individual expenditures in excess of 25.
Yeah, that was the question.
It's for individuals between all expenditures, but as far as the...
All expenditures for individuals in excess of $25. Is that what you're saying?
For any individual expenditure in excess of $25 shall be
itemized. That's what it is.
Any.
Or as an individual expenditure in excess of $25.
An individual expenditure in excess.
The common cause of amendment, which lists the name of any legislative official, is the thing we think we can't comply with merely because of the extreme difficulty in keeping track. As he pointed out, we think it's a practical matter. You could reasonably.
If you spend $25 on me, though, Dick.
I sure remember that.
I think we just got that one through.
I just don't see why that's a. I mean, people ought to know that if you're buying me $25 for the drinks.
Yeah, well, no, what? That's for a different reason.
We've come to the conclusion that there are numerous interpretations of what Section 6 sub 1 actually means in the last sentence, or even in the common cause substitution. The belief being that the question is this, as Mr. Speckman says, expenditures cumulative on one legislator within a reporting period, or does it mean a $25 expenditure on any one occasion? And so there would have to be resolved one way or the other, just whether you want to...
My interpretation is that it is cumulative.
That's not mine.
No, it isn't mine either.
I said any legislative official to whom or for whom.
Or for whose benefit.
Oh, she's reading the bill. I'm sorry.
The bill.
The amendment, I think, is what they're saying.
Everybody, we're talking about something else here. Everybody's not talking about something else.
As the bill was written.
Individual expenditure.
Right.
Did Dick Allen just give up on us completely?
No, he's checking on the bill in the Senate.
Well, has he listed himself as a lobbyist on that bill?
I'm not particularly certain of that.
Well, the thing is that it says, is that the bill is written, it says all expenditures in excess of $25 shall be itemized. That should, in fact, be clarified, you know, to say, in what time frame.
Is George.
Well, this is the train of my statement.
6-1, last line.
I'd rather have just that wording.
Then this would be in addition to that. Such itemized statement shall list the name of any legislative official to whom or for whose benefit an individual expenditure in excess of $25 is made. That too should be qualified.
At any one time?
You could, upon any one occasion, would be one way to, if that's your intent. Otherwise, you could be read to be cumulative. And he would have to say, okay, I told
you. Oh, that would be hard because you'd have to remember how many cups of coffee.
Yeah. What's common cause's intent? Is that one occasion or for cumulative?
For one occasion.
Oh, well, that's simple to add that to it.
I think the individual might have to come out and grant explanation of the individual there.
It meant
a different tab,
and
that would be
for whose benefit?
Perhaps just
an expenditure. Yeah, right.
An expenditure.
I think you're right.
In excess of.
I so moved that amendment.
Where we at? You changed the Common Cause amendment to read, such itemized statement shall list the name of any legislative official to whom or for whose benefit an expenditure, striking individual, an expenditure in excess of $25 is made upon any one occasion.
You want to take out individual?
Mm. Yeah.
So that means in 1 month.
Experience with lobbyists down here was so terrifying to me. That's why you never see me.
I wonder if that's
split me $50 before I was elected in the coffee shop downstairs, and he disappeared before I even knew who it was.
I wonder if addition on any one occasion doesn't read better after the word expenditure.
Send his wife
for whose benefit on any one occasion, for whose benefit on any one occasion an expenditure of in excess of $25 is made. Wouldn't that read better up there?
For whose benefit
on any one occasion an expenditure in excess of $25 is made. Is that, I don't know whether that sounds better or not. Now, my understanding.
Well.
Any legislative official, an individual expenditure.
Official to whom or on. To whom or on.
That's what we all laughed. I like for whose benefit.
For his influence, maybe.
This item of statement shall list the name of any legislative official to whom or for whose benefit.
Upon any one occasion, an expenditure in excess of $25 is made.
Yeah.
Because you're not paying him the $25. You're buying dinner, and that's for his benefit. Unless he gets sick of me next money.
Now, my understanding is that that is not a completely new 1-6-1, is it?
No,
that's
an addition to. Right.
So that the complete would now read, any lobbyist who engages in any lobbying activity during any session of the Legislative Assembly to file with the Office of the Secretary of State on the 15th of each month, a statement showing the total monies expended by the lobbyist for the purpose of lobbying in the preceding month. All expenditures in excess of $25 shall be itemized, period.
I thought that was for an individual. All expenditures for an individual in excess of $25 should be itemized.
For an individual in excess of $25?
No, that would be the next sentence.
You would then follow it by saying, such itemized statement shall list the name of any legislative legislative official to whom or for whose benefit upon any one occasion an expenditure in excess of $25 is made.
Well, didn't we put for an individual up there so the Capitol Club could have their sign and die party?
They can still have it, they just have dynamite.
Well, wouldn't that dynamite? I hope it doesn't cost them $25 a piece.
That comes out of your
dues. Oh, I would imagine it would. I'll bet it costs more than that.
It's none of my dues.
Costs a lot more than $25.
A lot more, make more than I do.
Well, and eat, and the musicians. You can't entertain people.
And it's a spouse deal, too.
I mean,
you wouldn't go to a dinner that cost less than $25.
That's right. I didn't go to that one. It was kind of a cheap affair, I heard. No, I heard it was a very lovely affair.
Hey, you don't think we need individuals up there in that proceeding?
All expenditures for an individual in excess of $25 shall be otherwise, but you're saying the same thing to the second, to the additional sentence. Saying that if you're
leaving out.
What?
Research,
there's a lot of other kinds of amendments.
Okay.
Well, it's for his benefit.
He doesn't have to
burn it. I mean, if you buy my husband a diamond wristwatch.
Would that be a benefit to you?
It seems to me that the public ought to know it.
Okay.
So that, in fact, you now have three sentences in Section 6 for Sub 1, which are the first two remain the same, and then the common clause that says, for whose benefit upon any one occasion, an expenditure in excess of $25 is made. Now, Chuck, are we correct in saying that that means there's no cumulative effect? Is that right?
No. I'm not sure I can make any...
Absolutely.
Official pronouncement on it, because the words are, of course, subject to, you know, it's beauty in the eye of the beholder. The words,
but we added on any one occasion to it, Chuck.
Yes.
So that
well,
should
I would
that
I would tend to think that it would.
Okay. Sub 2. Any lobbyist who lobbies during a time when the Legislative Assembly is not present shall file with the Office of Secretary of State by the 15th day of each calendar quarter a statement showing the total amount of all monies that were not previously reported pursuant to subsection 1 of this section that were expended during the previous quarter for the purpose of lobbying.
What is
the
15th calendar quarter?
That means January 15,
April
15,
October,
July,
and October.
This is the calendar quarter. 3. Statements required by this section need not include amounts expended by the lobbyist for personal living expenses. Now, we've changed. It used to say received by the lobbyist, but in fact we're only asking them to report what they expend. So even using the word received didn't fit in the first place. So then Chuck recommends we take out nor amounts received by him as income or salary. This is something that he doesn't expend. He receives it. If you take it out, it isn't reported. It doesn't exist. As far as the statement's concerned,
I thought we settled that Monday night.
I think they've what they've done is put the thing into proper wording.
Okay.
Differentiating between receive and expend. If the amount of any expenditure required to be included in the statement is not accurately known at the time the statement is required to be filed, an estimate thereof shall be submitted in a statement and designated as such. The exact amount expended for which an estimate was made shall be submitted in a subsequent report when the information is available.
I wonder if that should have for which a previous estimate was made.
For which a previous estimate.
I don't know if it's necessary, but it kind of
previous.
Is this where they want the third one?
Yes. It would read, any person employed by employing a lobbyist for consideration shall file a certified report with the Secretary of State by January 15th for the preceding year, stating the aggregate expenditures for salaries, office expenses, lobbyists' living expenses, and business expenses incidental to lobbying activities in the quarters of the head.
How's the employer going to know what the lobbyist's living expenses were?
He's not going to know that. And how about these people that get a flat amount of money from a person to lobby for? Maybe they're paid $2,000 to lobby.
Then they wouldn't have to.
Well, that says that anyone appointed one, consideration, shall file a report that states that.
But only if he expends that money himself. I don't, you know, you turn in your accounts.
Isn't what it says, Peg.
Huh?
Isn't what it says.
Well, let me. It doesn't
say that. It says, shall file a report stating salaries, office expenses, living expenses, business expenses.
What do you think, Loretta?
Most lobbyists are just paid a flat fee. They don't care what you do with them.
Some kind of security. Just wouldn't have any extraterritorial effects. Right? I mean, let's say 3M employs a guy. You're going to tell. We require somebody in Minnesota to.
Yeah, we can require them.
I don't see
how, we enforce it.
Exactly.
It may only under those circumstances that would.
Sorry. What would your reaction be, Henry, if we took out lobbyist living expenses?
Well, what we really.
Again, the objection that I think you're going to find from most of them is that they feel that their salary has nothing to do with the actual lobbying process.
Hi, come on in.
And as a result of this, this is why we have objected to the salary part of it. My salary is the same this year as it will be next year. There's no difference because of the legislative.
You can blame Mr. Nixon for that.
I don't see it because this is where we don't agree with the common cause. They feel that salary is a part of the lobbying process, but we don't feel that it's a part of the lobbying process because of the, we get it.
Well, I think in some cases it is, and in some cases it isn't. If we hire somebody for a specific lobbying job, then it's different from you who are on a retainer all year long.
Yes, this is why this becomes difficult to write because we have so many different classifications of persons that you're trying to cover. The same way, my office expenses go on the same way every year. And they're saying that maybe we would have to file those. I don't know what difference it makes to the public that it costs me $500 a month or $1,000 a month to run my office, because that has nothing to do with the legislative process.
George, somebody is working for some business in Portland. They are receiving a salary, and their employers, you go down to Salem during the session and lobby for our bills or against other bills, and we're going to pay your expenses down there in addition to your current salary, because you have your household here in Portland, your family's going to stay here, you have additional living expenses that you would have otherwise. Now this would be I feel that perhaps it would be considered and they would turn in their monthly living expenses to their employer and be reimbursed for them. This I can understand, you know, that type of listing as expense, that type of expenditure, but somebody's receiving a salary, I have some questions there, and they're coming down here and they're providing whatever.
You mean somebody's receiving $10,000 retainer to come down and lobby for this X organization, and out of the $10,000 he pays his own, he's working for himself, he pays his own.
Man.
Office expense, his own living expense out of the lump sum that he received.
Oh, I got all these. I got some of these.
As I read their amendment under this, I would have to give my living expenses and their living sale.
What part of your salary is deducted by whoever you work for income tax purposes?
Part of my salary is what?
It was my understanding that lobbying activity in most businesses is a legitimate income tax deduction.
I don't deduct anything.
No, she means
your
the person
employer.
Pays
your employer, you wouldn't be doing any of
it. We follow we have a 990. My auditors file all that tax. They file the whole.
Well, all your income is a deductible expense to the Pharmaceutical Association, and that is not broken down, I would assume.
Mr. Chairman, as I read this proposed amendment, if X company paid me, I'm in business for myself as a lobbyist, and X company gives me $10,000 to represent their interests here at the legislature. They have no idea how much that $10,000 I'm going to be using for these other things. And they're not paying. Actually, they're paying it indirectly, but they're giving me a lump sum as a fee.
And I know interest.
So all the employer would report was he paid me $10,000 as a fee to represent the company. If, on the other hand, I'm an employee of that X company on salary, and during legislative years I'm down here and I get additional money for expenses, living expenses and everything else, that is paid by the company, then the employer would know what those things are and could report them. Now that's the way I read this amendment.
Lost by one vote.
Lobbyist isn't going to be doing anything as far as reporting these things. Well, his employer is going to be reporting. Well, if we added
reconsideration,
stating the aggregate expenses for salaries.
Have you moved reconsideration?
And
I didn't, but I can.
Office,
your bill,
living and business expenses, if paid. Is paid by the employer.
Yeah. Ask somebody to vote for it to me.
We only expect him to report those things which he paid.
Scared.
You mean the way this thing is written?
Well, I know we're going to have to change the amendment a little bit.
Yeah. But the thing I'm getting back to is my own case. My salary has nothing to do with my lobbying. But I would have to try and break out of my salary how much of it is expended.
Henry?
Yes.
that vision that just flashed by just destroyed my complete thinking on that. Oh. Do the pharmacist give you an extra amount and you come down here to spend for such things as the pepper tree?
Yes.
I see.
Contributions.
Office?
My office expense is the same. I mean, my office is here permanently.
Yeah, because you're in a different situation.
I've moved down.
Well, do the members, such as yourself, who are on a salary, do they object to disclosing the salary? Is that what the whole problem is?
They
figure it isn't anybody's business what their salary is. So the question really is whether we're going to require them to disclose their salary. Really what it was.
In this case, I would probably be the one who would be filing for the employer. I'm authorized by my association to file papers with.
Well, I don't like to vote on it with Ed not here. Let's go on when Ed comes back with that. Well,
Section 7 remains the same as it was originally. No lobbyist shall instigate the introduction of any legislation for the purpose of obtaining employment to lobby or change the major legislation. 2. No lobbyist shall attempt to influence the vote of any member of the legislative assembly or any legislation by the promise of financial support of his candidacy or by threat of financing opposition to his candidacy at any future election. Oh, I think that or is on, I'm sorry, on any legislation.
Expenses.
Yeah, but I don't think those are particularly a problem as opposed to salaries.
I'm certainly not hung up on the salary part, but the total expenditure of money spent by a firm for lobbying should be reported. Now, the only problem is I'm not aware of all the conversations gone on, but legal counsel, there's a real problem where they're legal counsel and lobbying both. I don't know how to break that apart. I just don't know how. I've checked with several people. But I think the total amount spent by a firm on lobbying a bill should be public.
By the firm,
yes.
All right, let me ask common causes. Is the intent of the amendment that the employer merely say, for 1973, we spent $20,000 for lobbying activities,
right?
In the aggregate. Not to break it down, and why do we have to?
That would be a lot easier for me to swallow.
What we're putting here is
stating all expenses.
What we want to do is avoid having duplication and reporting of things that a lobbyist has reported monthly. So that's where we include the areas of salaries, other expenses that the lobbyist has not reported, monthly reports, but the employer would report a total of the various salaries, living expenses, things that the lobbyist has not been required to report, but that the employer could report and not really divulge personal salaries by reporting a total sum of all other expenses that have been expended in behalf of that company for lobbying activities.
Any problem with that?
There's no problem to my way of thinking that I don't care if we report is and what is.
Well, I'm saying we write it.
Let me try this on you. Any person employing a lobbyist for consideration shall file a certified report with the Secretary of State stating the name of the person lobbying for them and the total cost.
They've already filed a statement or a declaration of who's of authorization and lobbying.
Pardon?
How do you define total cost?
Whatever the employer is paid.
Well, you could do it this way, by say by report by January.
He's going to list something in his income tax return of lobbying X dollars.
Well, what you would do would be by changing, by saying by January 15th, stating here, stating the aggregate expenditure incidental to lobbying activities in the employer's behalf.
How about the total expenditures for lobbying activities in the employer's behalf?
Yeah, same thing.
The total expenditure would be more palatable.
But I think you've got to be careful with wording so that they're
stating the total.
Maybe Chuck could do that for us.
Then I would like to also state that I see a problem then when we say part of it's for legal counsel, part of it's for lobbying, and we're going to say, now you have to split that apart, and yet we have a, you know, we have a...
The employer's going to have to make that decision.
Yeah, but we need to leave an opening there some way so that we don't throw the guy in jail if he's 1% off, too.
Right.
As to whether spec...
And I don't know.
Why do you have to split it?
Okay.
Partly for lobbying or not?
Because that would be very difficult to do.
Substantially, yeah.
Because lots of times they'll bring, if anybody, any businessman has to have a lawyer in order to do business anymore, really,
sure.
Really good legal counsel. And just last night I saw the Association of Contractors had a bill that was coming up last night that was very important to him, and I looked up on the balcony and I saw that their lawyer, a guy that I went to law school with, and I happened to, so I know who he is, and he represents him, and they had brought him down here, and we're keeping another call.
I have another bill.
Oh.
Yeah. Well.
So, you know, what's legal expenses? Is it driving the lawyer down here? Is it the time that he's sitting up in the balcony saying...
Why do you have to separate him anyway? I don't understand.
I don't understand it either. If you know how much the employer is spending to get a bill passed or defeated, what makes the difference?
Whether he's paying the lawyer or whether he's paying him.
If the legal counsel is just advising him on the bill, too, then I guess it should be included.
It would be an awful lot to break down because some people have lawyers that just read the bills
and say whether it's... That's right.
That's not wrong.
Part of it, it is, under the definition of it.
Chuck, can you take a run at that for me?
Yes, sir. I've got some language that Representative Lindquist has suggested. If you start in that third line that says, by January 15th for the preceding year, stating the...
Total amount spent.
The total expenditures for... And then skip down to lobbying activities in the employer's behalf.
Yeah, solves it, I think.
I think so.
And then cross out all that stuff in between.
Yeah. So the amendment would now read, any person employing a lobbyist for consideration shall file a certified report with the Secretary of State by January 15th of the preceding year, stating the total expenditure for lobbying activities in the employer's behalf.
Is there going to be a new sentence to sub 3 of 6?
That almost needs to be a separate section.
Section or subsection?
Well, it's section 6 talks about what lobbyists have to do, and this is a...
Yeah, it should be another
kind of
section.
Different thought.
New section 7.
Yeah, we didn't put the break up. We were
just
doing those
meaning
as categories that this area is, you know, that we...
Okay, this is section 7, if there's no objection.
All right.
No.
New aid.
New aid.
No offer. So we got that. No lobbying sophisticated introduction. No.
This is tough.
On the racetrack.
I can't believe it.
In sub 2, it actually reads, no lobbyist shall attempt to influence the vote of any member of the legislative assembly on any legislation.
Well, I think, or influence any legislation. I don't think it should be on. I think it should be or, the way it is.
Any member or.
We've got to go back to influence.
No lobbyist shall attempt to influence the vote of any member of the legislative assembly, comma, or any legislation.
Or influence any legislation.
Maybe if we add influence, it
would be better. Influence relates to legislation. Any legislation relates to influence.
Well, then the rest of the sentence,
I think the sentence reads all right. I don't know why you're having trouble.
I don't either.
No lobbyist shall attempt to influence the vote of any member of the legislative assembly or any legislation by the promise of financial support of. Doesn't read all right.
Or his candidacy, support of his candidacy, the legislation's candidacy. That was a typo on my behalf.
Yeah. Promise of financial support of.
Well, I don't know.
Of or defeat of his candidacy at any future election.
Why don't we
need or any legislation? No lobbyist shall attempt to influence the vote of any member of the legislative assembly by the promise of financial support of his candidacy. Do you need any legislation?
No.
So it'd be, no lobbyist shall attempt to influence the vote of any member of the legislative assembly by the promise of financial support of his candidacy, comma, or by threat of financial opposition to his candidacy, comma, at any future election. No person shall lobby or offer to lobby for consideration, any part of which is contingent upon the success of any lobbying activity. 4. No lobbyist shall knowingly or willfully make any false statement or misrepresentation to any legislative official, or knowing a document to contain a false statement, cause a copy of such document to be received by a legislative official without notifying such official of writing of the truth. No legislative official shall receive consideration from any other person, from any person other than the state of Oregon for acting as a lobbyist.
I don't think you should say from any person. No legislative official shall receive consideration other than the state of Oregon for acting as a lobbyist. No legislative official shall receive consideration.
Other than from the state of Oregon.
Other than from the state of Oregon for acting as a lobbyist.
Each report, registration, or statement required by ORS 171.755 to 171.775.
Now, what about the change there? Is that all right, Jack?
Well, I'll fix that.
Yeah, okay. Shall be signed and certified as true and correct by the person required to submit it. 2. Each person required to submit a report, registration, or statement by ORS 171.755 to 171.775 shall submit a report, registration, or statement that is substantially conforms to law and to the truth.
Bob, you want it notarized?
No. Well, I might be in Europe.
Section 10. All information submitted to the Office of the Secretary of State and report, registration, or statement required by is a public record.
I've forgotten why we needed both 1 and 2 of section 9.
Well, the reason being that you could, in fact, you could submit one and say, certify that it was true and correct, when in fact you knew it wasn't. Down here you say, in addition to doing that, you also have to know that it conforms to law and to the truth. And Chuck and I went over putting them both into one or fell in the work better if you get them serially. Section 11. In carrying out the provisions of this Act, the Secretary of State shall, 1. Prescribe forms for statements and reports required to be filed by this Act, and provide such forms to persons required to file such statements and reports. 2. Accept and file any information voluntarily supplied that exceeds the requirements of this Act, and 3. Make statements and reports filed available for public inspection and copying during regular office hours, and make copying facilities available at a charge not to exceed actual cost. Chuck and I put in a new 12. In addition to the duties prescribed in Section 11 of this Act, the Secretary of State may, 1. Make investigations.
Is that Section 10 or Section 11?
12.
No, I mean in the
duties prescribed in Section 11 of this Act.
Should be 11.
The Secretary of State may, 1. Make investigations with respect to statements and reports filed under provisions of this Act, and with respect to any alleged failure to file any statements or reports required under the provisions of this Act, and upon signed complaint by any individual with respect to apparent violation of any part of this Act. In making any such investigation, the investigating authority has the power to take and hear evidence, administer oaths, and compel by subpoena the attendance of witnesses and the production of books, papers, and documents. We substituted the investigating authority for the Secretary of State.
Good.
So that when the thing is put in the commission, it just slides
fine.
Up. 2. Issue.
Make sure.
No, it's actually ISSUE is not a typo. Upon request, and publish advisory opinions on the requirements of this Act based on a real or hypothetical set of circumstances. And 3. Prescribe and publish rules and regulations to carry out the provisions of this Act pursuant to the provisions of ORS Chapter 183.
I'm getting it, kid.
Section 13. In addition to such penalties as otherwise may be provided by law, a person is subject to such sanctions as either House of the Legislative Assembly may prescribe.
There's a spelling error there.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. I'm going to have a little trouble with that, or any rule promulgated. Don't you think that we've always had trouble when you put criminal sanctions on violation of rules?
Criminal sanctions.
Criminal sanctions. Civil penalties.
Section 14.
I don't think you were there.
Is subject to such sanctions as either House or Legislative Assembly may prescribe if he A. violates any provision of section of this Act that originally was just the reporting of section.
6 and 7 and what we want.
I believe it was
I think now it should maybe be 6, 7, and 8.
5, 6, 7, and 8, I think, Mr. Chairman.
5, 6, 7, and 8.
5 is a requirement to file the original registration.
Right.
6 is the filing of the financials. 7 is the instigation. 8 is the...
No, 7 is the...
false statements, things of that nature. Probably should be 5, 6, 7, and 8.
Right. 5, 6, 7, and 8. B. Fails to file any report, registration, or statement or furnish any information required by ORS 171-755-775. 2. The sanctions referred to in subsection 1 of this section shall be uniformly applied to all persons subject to Section 14. 1. Any person who violates any provision of sections
5 to 8.
Does 2 include?
Yes. 2-8 of this Act, or promulgated pursuant thereto, shall forfeit and pay to the general fund of the state treasury a civil penalty in an amount determined by the secretary of state.
Time. Why don't we make that consistent with the above? Any person who violates any provision of sections 5, 6, 7, and 8 we have above, why don't we do that here? Or do this up above, one way or the other.
In the case of violation by an individual, such penalty shall not exceed $250 for each violation. In the case of violation by any person other than an individual, such penalty shall not exceed $1,000 for each violation. Two, the civil penalty referred to in subsection 1 of this section may be recovered in an action brought thereon in the name of the state of Oregon in any court of appropriate jurisdiction. In any such action, the court may review the penalty as to both liability and reasonableness of amount.
Reasonable math.
Is this your typing, Loretta?
No.
That's
somebody else.
Good thing I'm not paid to be a typist.
I take full responsibility for that. Section 14. This act takes
That's
effect.
15.
15. This act takes effect on January 1, 1974.
Okay, anybody got any suggestions, thoughts?
We charge a fee?
Well, we're charging a fee for all the political people who file under our
reasonable fee.
Conflict of interest. $100?
Pay the cost of all this?
Well,
we're
going to have Secretary of State
fill out
their forms and provide
them. Due pass recommendation.
Mrs. Paulus has moved that we pass the bill, send the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
What about the fee? Should we impose a fee for
the Secretary of State? Can't he do that under his rules?
I'm not sure. I don't think so.
You mean a fee to file?
Yeah.
Like what, $5?
Well, we said on the other one, $10 initially and $5 for each. Well, you got a monthly report. You couldn't say for each subsequent report, it costs $5 a month.
Well, it seems to me that the public's going to have to bear the cost of this, too, you know. It's the public that's demanding the disclosure. It's for the public's benefit. The public should pay for it.
Not
as far as I'm concerned, it's a policy decision on my part.
Well, we pay our fees of everything else, whether it's for the public's benefit or not.
Like what?
Everything.
Everything, which is
everything that comes out of commerce has a fee attached to it.
I mean, that's the public.
All that agricultural stuff has a fee attached to it.
Consumer
protection. When we request the Secretary of State to do things for the legislative candidates, in theory we pay the cost, but we don't nearly pay enough.
How many lobbyists would you guess this would affect? 500, did you say before?
You're talking about all of the people who would
how many?
We have about 125 to
250. Your total range would be less than if you made a $10 for the each initial registration, you could collect somewhere possibly $5,000 a year.
Well, I, Norma, I disagree with you. I kind of think it should be a filing fee. And I'd like to charge that woman from Eugene that filing fee.
I'm going to give you an early Christmas present and fix it so you don't have to worry about her anymore. That's going to be my special signy die okay. gift to you.
Norma, how are you going to fix it? I move that we charge a $10 filing fee to the Secretary of State for the initial report and a $5 filing fee thereafter for each time the person renews his license.
For each, oh, $10 for each, well, we don't have anything like that. What you've got is a $10 for the initial registration.
Registration.
Yeah, for each registration.
Yeah.
If a guy represents four different groups, he's going to have to pay $40. Just
file one application, listing everybody as I read this.
Right. It's all on one.
And then the subsequent year, he pays
$10.
$10 a year. $10 a session. If there's a special session, you probably.
But if there's no session, he pays $10. $10 a year.
Yeah.
So the little guy that wants to come down here and lobby me, if he if he spends more than $50 in Xerox, I mean, then he has to pay an additional $10.
That's $50 in a reporting period.
$50 a month. $300 for the session.
If he spends more than that, he's a pro.
Yeah.
It would be the total cost for a 6 month session, $310 as opposed to $300.
Well, I think there are a lot of people that are knocking on your doors that would cover.
I don't think. We're spending $50 a month.
How often are we going to require the filing?
Well, just I'm talking about
session. You register
every January or whatever. Well, unless you work during the interim.
If you work during the interim, you have to file again.
Yeah, but that's only $10 a year.
Yeah, but I'm saying you have to file. I think under that, the way that bill was, because I can't remember, did we file each year?
There was a provision in the original proposal submitted by the Capital Club that had some language in there requiring filing prior to each session, and I fear it was not very artfully worded, because the thought that it was supposed to convey was that it was a method whereby you could purge the record. Whatever you want to do about that, I think perhaps if you want some sort of enabling type language in there to permit the holder of the record to be able to discard last year's record and start again from scratch every year, we need to put something in there. Differently worded than started at first.
Also, avoid the conflicts of people who are screening accounts.
I move that each registered lobbyist is charged a $10 fee yearly for to help defray the expenses of the law paid upon registration. And it'd be written into the bill.
Paid upon registration and then by January 15th thereafter.
Well, you see, the bill doesn't become effective until January 1974, so...
The intent is that they will pay the $10 when they register. If a year comes around and they don't register, they don't
don't pay it, but if they carry on any lobbying activity later on in that year, they'd have to register and pay the 10 then.
I wonder if we made the fee $12, then it would be easy to prorate. Better not, because the expense is the same anyway, whether it's a...
You require it, I think, every year, and that way you'll save a lot of people from getting into trouble.
Yeah.
They're out.
And yeah, I agree.
Fee to be paid.
Is there any objection to that?
Nope. I'll move the bill to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendation.
Is there any discussion? Mrs. Paulus moves the bill to the floor with the due pass recommendation. No discussion. The clerk call the roll.
Virginia Drilling.
Aye.
Paulus.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Let me tell you what I did on the last bill. I asked Representative Blumenauer if he'd like to carry it, and he said yes, so I'm going to ask Representative Glenn if he'd like to carry this one. Thank you all so much for your time, trouble, energy, and I think our work is pretty well finished, except for one, the Senate bill that they're working on. We'll see about next Monday night. Oh, listen, while we're here and there's three of us, what bill should we table? 2197 or
20s. Well, I'm going to check finally on what the status of transportation is and see if you can transport the kind of set of transportation. If it goes out,
we can do that Monday night.
We can do it Monday night.
If you don't post in your house, you get involved in lobbying.
That's the question on 2101. The trouble is you got 2101, Senate Bill 400. And this is the one amendment that will cure the conflict.
Well, cure this conflict, but keep in mind that while curing this conflict, Senate Bill 400, introduced by Senator Hale, will be proposed in the Senate tomorrow, which makes an amendment that won't show up either in 2157 or in 2101 on RS 2404.
We get out of here at least 400.
We did, we got here. Of course, if we got out of here 2 weeks ago, we were dead.
Chairman, could I make a comment? You know, some of those conflicts can also be resolved by signing the governor's signature.
Yeah, like the resolve of Senate Bill 40 and Wire Trickle Back.
Yeah. I assume those are all different amendments, different subsections.
No, of course, yeah. A couple, three of them all have been in the back. Exemption on coming up.
Lee?
Yeah.
Some of these are obvious conflicts, like what Wally's talking about, but aren't these conflicts in the notices and so on? Aren't they just quick examinations and they might be conflicts?
Well, the section he's talking about is the so-called testimonial privileges. The one we dealt with is one subsection, which is the executive privilege. And then they're talking about the medical testimony privilege, which I think is a separate subsection. But I can't see that there would be any problem with. First, I've got to find the section.
Well, it's section 13, starting at page 9, with page 10, lines 9 through 11. It's just a coordinated problem.
Yeah.
It's really not very serious, but I am worried, as I indicated last year, we all are aware of, he passes the Threat Dismissal Act, Senate Bill 40, in proper order, and they're signed by the governor in the order they left the House, who had no help, they were signed in reverse order, and so Senate Bill 40 undid this part of our Threat Dismissal Act. And so somebody might be, I thought I'd impressed upon what the council went on for life was.
Wouldn't anybody like to, well, I made Senator Hurd propose that we accept the amendments given to us by legislative council as dated June 18, 1973. And we expect.
Questions that you raised,
they seem to feel that they were necessary. number 57, but that's the only one we have outside of 871 and waiving the other two buildings.
Secretary of State, probably ought to have been put out. We have another location still up.
Well,
and I thought we would grab it and so the committee's put, you know, all the part of this. And if we have that one, I'll find out what it is.
I think it's down, I think I'd like you to transfer to that committee, we can set the whole thing up then. Yeah, you put that, that now is the Fair Campaign Practices Committee or something like that. It can be turned into our Fair Practices Commission. It can be funded. And the duties, it does speak to the issue of the Senator Carlisle, not several times. In fact, the Secretary of State is not the one to be making the decisions on, particularly when he's on the ballot, maybe, as to whether the statement is fair or not there.
You can't, that one, that's the fourth main part of our.
Well, I would like to tie it in with something else, and I don't know how the attorney will want to do it, but each one has their own private attorney. I'd like to set up, if that goes through, I kind of like to set up in the Secretary of State's office that the administrators will be at the turn.
Yeah, I think, frankly, that's, I read in the little flash, the pretty general, I suggested that we were going to fund that turn in the Secretary of State's office. One way around that is to have the
but there be a rent office, too, or his office, yeah. And because all, this is going to be, mostly is going to be law-like decisions.
Right.
And they can't be running over there in 26 bucks an hour. And I agree. So then the decision can file a prosecutor's vote.
I want you to know, Mr. Attorney General,
he left.
I'll vote for 27.
But, you know, it was great.
Yeah, I agree.
They just need one there.